Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, January 6th. Kelsey's out today, but I have a special guest co-host. I have Miss Sheena Metal in the studio. Welcome to the show, Sheena.
Thank you for having me. I love being here.
And if you guys have been living under a rock, then you don't know Sheena. Otherwise, you know Sheena. Sheena is everywhere on the radio. And you have a couple shows at least here, Sheena.
I have four.
Four shows.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes I have five. The fifth one kind of comes and goes with whoever's hosting it.
Right. And so you pretty much took over the station.
I did, yeah.
And I wrote to you yesterday. I said you're officially part of the furniture
now. I am, yeah.
So there you go.
That's a good thing. I hope I'm a love seat in the corner that people like to sit on.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing, yeah. Definitely.
My seven-year anniversary here yesterday.
Yes, it was. Well, congratulations to you. So January 5th, when was it? 2009 that you joined us. And it was a chance meeting, too.
It was completely a chance meeting, yeah.
Right. And we were sort of introduced by somebody that we knew. And the rest is history.
Right.
Yeah.
Who also had a show here, and I think still does, or did for a very long time.
Yeah. Now, you'd been on radio before, much longer before that.
Just celebrated in August my 21 years.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a long time.
Yeah, but this is officially the longest I've ever worked anywhere now.
Really?
Yeah.
So good. So I think it's at this point it's safe to say it's your career.
Oh,
radio
God, yes.
Is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I like to say the arts because I do a lot of things inside the arts, but this is
definitely true, what
I do full time always.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us what else you do. You have your events at the Improv.
Sure.
Occasionally.
I broadcast this show from there four times a year, my daily show here, the Sheena Metal Experience. And then I also I host comedy for them monthly. And I do a little bit of everything. I started as an actor. I fell into radio accidentally, so I still act. Uh-huh. I write. I work as a journalist in music and radio, sometimes in print. I host a lot of things, MC things. I write. I'm a director. I direct the Vagina Monologues every year for charity with last year with close to 100 actresses that had all been here.
Wow.
On the Sheena Metal Experience. I produce. I'm an artistic director for a theater company here in L.A., Ensemble Studio Theater L.A. I just joined an improv group.
Wow.
I just keep saying yes.
You keep busy.
Yeah, I just say yes.
Yeah, exactly,
even things
right?
I never thought I'd do, I just say yes to. And
wow, that's an important strategy. You see, that's what people should do, you know, get involved in things.
Yeah, don't be scared.
Do a lot of different things.
Try things. If I hadn't tried radio, I never wanted to be in radio. I never aspired to do it. I took a friend's show for a night.
Uh-huh.
So that I could put it on my resume as an actor. That was it. And then
really?
The minute I did
it,
I thought, whoa, it was like that lightning bolt moment. I'm like, oh, this is what I do.
Yeah. Huh?
So.
And when did that start here in L.A. or were you living somewhere else?
No, I've been in L.A. since I was 13. My dad got transferred here. I grew up in Orange County and then I moved up here when I was 23 and started doing a local cable show that I wrote and I was in. And that was how I met James Bartolet, who's here now. He also had a local cable show.
Right.
And mine was more like a crazy sitcom with actors, and his was more like an entertainment talk show. And he offered me his show. He was going to back out of it because he was involved in a new relationship and didn't want to have to be on the air, so he could never take trips or do anything on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I took it for a night, figuring they'd fire me in the morning. And they called me in the morning and doubled my hours.
Wow, how cool is that?
And then I was there for almost 4 years.
Wow.
It was wonderful. That was an AM station.
Yeah.
That's now KRLA. It was KIEV.
Oh, okay. So cool. Was it a talk station or a music station?
It was a talk station. They syndicated a lot of the big kind of right-wing talkers during the day.
Okay.
And then at night, it was kind of a free-for-all on the weekends. And I did a Sunday morning from 2 to 4 in the morning.
Oh, good.
So that kind of started my life as a night owl.
Yeah.
And then KLSX, which was 97.1 FM, went from being classic rock, Stern in the Morning, and then classic rock, to being this new format of FM talk. And I desperately wanted to get on the station, and nobody would pay any attention to me or cared that I was on an AM station in the middle of the night. So I got a gig on the Nasty Man show with my band coming on and playing songs in the studio.
Uh-huh.
And when they asked me to come back, they asked us to come back and play again, and he asked me to sit in as his co-host.
Wow.
And the third time he asked me to join the show.
Really?
So I kind of snuck in the back door.
Yeah, yeah. But you made yourself available. That's the point. You know, the opportunity was there, and you were there as well at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And that's amazing. But obviously, they noticed your talent early on. And the rest is history,
yeah.
I guess.
And all I'd ever, I was there for 7 years, and all, almost 7 years. And then I took my, my day job was working as a music promoter in my 20s and 30s. And I had put together Music Highway, which we have here now, and was syndicating it just myself and recording it in a friend's recording studio. Mm. And I lost my LA affiliate. I was on thousands of stations all over the world. And one of my LA affiliates went down, and we got introduced, and I came just to see if you were interested in picking it up, having no idea that you had any idea who I was.
Yeah.
And then you asked me to do, to launch a Channel 2, Afternoon Drive.
Right.
And my whole life, all I'd ever wanted was to do Afternoon Drive.
Really?
Yeah.
So that worked out great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that happened exactly. That's when we launched Channel 2.
Uh-huh.
That was
January 5th, 2009. Yep.
And
it's my anniversary and the channel's anniversary
right.
are the same day.
You christened the channel pretty much. And that was a good time because that was a year after we started and we were already expanding to another channel.
Yeah. And this is brilliant. I mean, this is everything you do here, Sam. You know I think that. But it's changed my entire life. I'm a different person.
Yeah.
My career has never been so amazing. I mean, there's just something about the magic that you put into this station.
Yeah.
And your big brain that knew just cleverly what to do to grow this new media.
Yeah. I don't know if I can take that much credit, but okay. You know, I mean, somebody did it, so I guess it was
it
me.
Had to be you.
But I don't remember planning it this way. It just sort of happened. You
well,
know?
How many people open, how many, since we've been doing this, how many people have started internet stations? They last a week, a month.
Right. And then they don't
months,
exist anymore.
And
no,
they don't
that's
grow.
True. That's true. Yeah. I've had a lot of great support from great people. Over the years, I've met a lot of great people here, and so have you. I mean,
you mentioned
hundreds of guests we've had over the years. You
Absolutely.
Know? And you've met a lot of great people, and that's one thing about having a show here is that you meet a lot of great people,
yeah.
and the new opportunities open up for you, you know, and usually with the guests and stuff, interesting people, you know. So, by the way, we are going to have a phone guest today. We're going to be talking about slot machines.
Nice.
And how to beat them, Sheena.
On Miss Vegas More.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think a lot of people would love to hear about that. So stay tuned. The guest, I'm expecting him to call, but I looked at their email and they might be expecting us to call.
Oh.
And I never got a confirmation from them. So I have the number ready. If he doesn't call 10:15, then we'll call him.
That sounds good.
Yeah, we have to be prepared.
I just wanted to also say, while we're talking about my anniversary,
uh-huh.
I think it's really interesting if you believe in fate, that not only is James Bartolet, who gave me my first radio show here,
uh-huh.
but also Mother Love, who was my radio hero, is here.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I heard her out the other day when I was doing my show. She was out in the hall telling her guests, that's my protege. I mean, we'd never met, but just listening to her do radio
right.
made me want to do radio, to do
wow.
to do talk radio.
Yeah.
And then they're both here. I mean, how...
Yeah. No, that's true.
How fatalistic is that?
And the funny thing is, I used to love listening to 97.1, and I had heard you on there, and I had heard Mother Love on there.
Yeah.
And so when you both popped up in my life, separately, of course, it was great, you know, because here, you know, we have a station of amateurs, and now we're getting a couple of professionals who have been there, and you guys do daily shows. So it sort of like created the backbone for the station, you know. And because, you know, weekly shows are weekly shows, you know, you get to hear them once a week and they're great. But when you have a daily show, you become part of the, you know, of
sure.
the daily going ons here,
yeah.
you know. So it's good and it's always reliable. People want to know you're always there at 5 o'clock, 5 to 7 every evening on Channel 2 right here on LA Talk Radio. And you also have Music Highway that
right.
you mentioned. That's on Wednesdays at 3.
Uh-huh.
Then you have Haunted playground.
Right.
What's that show about?
Anything that goes bump in the night. So it's everything from psychics to ghosts to demons to UFOs to Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster. and we kind of decided to do that, right? Because I had had so many paranormal guests on my daily show.
Right. People love this stuff.
Oh, it's anything that has haunted in it.
Yeah.
It's the show that promotes itself.
Yeah.
And because people love the paranormal. It's so big right now. And then through that, I fell into the paranormal community. And now I host conventions and I'm writing a book and I'm involved in two paranormal groups. And it all because of the radio.
Wow.
Radio's the gift that keeps on giving.
It really is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're fortunate enough to sit behind a microphone, you realize how much fun you can really have.
Yeah.
You know, and you get to communicate with people who you might not normally communicate with and talk to and meet. So,
well, and for people like you and me that suck information in, we're always learning something, right?
Right.
Don't you learn something every day on the show? You learn something.
And that's how you become good on radio. You know, you can't sit here without anything to say.
Right.
Obviously, you know, and it's not enough just to be able to talk, but you want people to be interested in what you have to say.
Sure.
So that's not an easy task. And, you know, when you get to that point, you should feel pretty proud of yourself. So you have that. And then lastly, you have the show with Susan Olson.
Right.
Two Chicks Talking Politics. That's on Mondays. So Sheena pretty much owns our schedules.
Well, you know what? Out of that show, Susan and I went from two people that thought each other were groovy but didn't really know each other that well to really becoming best friends.
Yeah.
And also now we play wives on a web series.
Wow.
So it all happened because of that show.
Yeah, exactly. So the radio has really connected a lot of people here, and that's really my greatest reward, is to see people collaborating and doing things.
Yeah.
You know, that normally would not have happened had it not been for the radio. So, yeah, so now you guys know who Sheena Middle is.
Hi.
I always wondered, I don't think I ever asked you, how did you get the middle into your name? Because I think many people think the same way I do, that you're somehow connected with metal rock or something, right? So does that have anything to do with that, with metal rock,
when I was
heavy metal?
18, I worked at an art supply store with my best friend, who was a fine artist. And there was this whole kind of crazy cast of characters that worked there. And one of them was this heavy metal chick that, you know, kind of talked like this and talked about how she came, oh, God, I'm so drunk. And she met her boyfriend in a group sex party. And I thought she was fascinating. So I used to do her all the time.
Uh-huh.
And my friend would follow me around with a tape recorder. And then he would go to these parties with his enormous Mexican family and play the tapes for everybody. And then his cousins would come up to me and, oh, my God, do it, do it, do it. So I started doing that in other characters. And we eventually gutted my parents' living room and dining room, and we did a one-woman show that I then had no idea what to do with it. So when I was sending out headshots and resumes as an actor, I would include little tidbits of each character that I did.
Right.
And for some reason, Sheena, I would get calls all the time for people to come and come do my cable show as Sheena. And I'd dress up in the rock and roll costume and I'd go.
Oh.
I fell in love with local cable and thought, I'm going to put my own show together. So I wrote one and I did it. But because so many people on cable access were kooks, they thought that Sheena was real. So people would say, hey, I'll give you $50, come and MC my band. Or I'll give you $25, come and host my karaoke night. So I would dress up in the costume and go, never thinking anybody thought that's really who I was.
Right.
And then that turned into a job in the music world promoting live shows, which I originally did to promote the TV show. And then it became its own thing for me.
Wow.
And then I started working in about 15 aspects of music as a publicist and a producer and all these different things because of Sheena. And and then eventually I stopped wearing the costume when I got to KLSX. But every time I come here, even when I came here with you, I said, look, I have a real name. Do you want me to use it? And everybody says, no, we love her. So now I pretty much use Sheena all the time, except with my best friends.
Right. But how did you get the metal part?
That was the name I made up. Sheena Metal.
Okay.
That was the name when I created her.
Okay, I see. So it was the complete name, not just Sheena, but Sheena Metal.
Sheena Metal, yeah.
Wow.
I thought it would be funny for her to have a super obvious name.
Right.
And it's funny how many people think it's my real name.
Yeah, well, it's catchy, you know, and you were smart enough to have a catchy name in entertainment and stuff.
Right.
A memorable name, and that's good.
Well, and in the beginning, I hated it because I had to spell it for everybody, and nobody understood. Oh, yeah, Sheena. But then this wonderful thing called the internet came along.
Uh-huh.
And it, I think I'm the only one in the world.
Yeah.
So you don't get it confused with anybody else.
That's true.
And it's
That's
afforded
cool.
me the chance to have this really neat public life,
right.
but I can still go to the doctor or someplace and nobody knows my private name.
Right.
So I just have like a totally weird life where I just wander around. When I go down to Orange County to see my mom, no one knows who the hell I am. And it's kind of nice. Yeah. It's like being two people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's been in the, you know, in media for you, you know. I mean, you always run into people, and yeah, sometimes you have to come up with catchy names, you know. I've been thinking of changing my name. I mean, you know, who cares about Sam Hassan, you know? It's like, what kind of a name is that? Hassan? People keep saying Hassan all the time, and it's irritating, you know, because being Israeli, you don't want to be called an Arabic name, but what are you going to do? So, but... You know, I don't know. I never got around to it or something.
Weren't
but
you for a while going to take Steel?
Yeah, I'm still thinking it was like Sam Steel would be really cool,
okay,
right?
The day you do that, we're creating the Metal and Steel music show. Because it's just too jacked up
it's
not to
true.
Do it.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes people call me Sheena Steel.
Really?
They get confused and they just think, I know it's some kind of metal. And sometimes people call me Sheet Metal, which I think is hysterical. And I don't
funny.
Know if it's a typo. Or an autocorrect, or if they just think that's the name.
That's true. That could be an autocorrect.
But I get that sometimes. I get like, dear Sheet, please listen to my CD. And I'm like, really? Would that be somebody's name? But, you know, maybe. Would Sheena Metal be somebody's name?
Funny. Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
But my last name, I think, is relatively easy, and people mess it up all the time.
Yeah.
So people actually mess up Sheena Metal less.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, it sort of rolls off your tongue. So you guys can catch Sheena here on the station. You don't even have to look for it. Just click on Listen Live. She'll probably be there somewhere.
Just go to the latalkradio.com and my face is always somewhere there because there's always a show I just finished or I'm just starting.
Right. But at least you do get the weekends off, so that's good.
Yeah.
You know? You get to rest a little bit.
Well, I always worked weekends with music and when I did daily shows on other stations, so I feel like a regular person now that has a Monday through Friday job and then has the weekends off.
Yeah.
I've never had that. I worked at movie theaters when I was young. I always worked weekends.
Really?
It's the first
time.
So
now you
life.
Have, yeah, sort of like a regular life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. I know. I used to work weekends many times over the years. But and I still do, but you know when it's yours, it's different, and it's not like I have to spend hours here on the weekend, you know. But somehow I'm always on, you know.
Yeah, me too.
You have to. Yeah,
I work at home all the time on the weekends, but it's something different about not having to be somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm waiting for our guest who's supposed to be calling in now, but I see he's not. So why don't we call him?
Okay.
And we're going to talk to Mr. Ernest Cobb, and he calls himself the Slot Guru. So let's go ahead and see if we can get
your
that.
Your call has been forwarded to an automated.
Okay. That's not very good. Not a good sign.
Don't you love when you get that on the air?
Yeah.
That happens.
Isn't that special?
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite is when their voicemail actually beeps, and sometimes I just leave them a message from the air.
Yeah,
and then sometimes I realize I'm talking to them, and at the same time, the voicemail is recording us, and in the middle of the conversation, the voicemail tells us we've reached the maximum limit. Because that's great radio.
Yeah, right. Well, it'll show you to wait for an acknowledgement from the other end. You know when you talk. Yeah. But so we'll try Ernest again in a few minutes, and we'll see if we can get to him. This guy is called himself the Slot Guru, and he's going to give us some tips on slot machines.
It's wonderful.
And I never thought that you could really figure them out, but apparently he did. You know. So I just I seldom use. Let's put it this way. I never use slot machines in the hope of winning. You know, it's just sort of like to play around, you know, to feel you're doing something. Because I feel you can't control them. It's a machine.
Sure.
It's pre-programmed, you know, to screw you every time. So we'll see what he has to say. It sounds
I always thought it was
you know?
Just chance.
Yeah.
Like when you give somebody a dollar at the fair and pick the duck up and it has a number and you either get like a comb or you get something really cool and it's just chance.
Right. But you know what? That's chance because... Really, I mean, if it's not gamed or anything, it is chance. But think of slot machines. I mean, it's a machine with a computer.
Yeah.
They can program it to never lose. You know what I'm saying? To take more than it gives out. And I think pretty much that's probably what is happening there. So we'll see how there's ways around it or something. You know?
But I play video poker. Do you like that?
Yeah, that's it.
That's what I do mostly in Vegas. I love it.
I know. Yeah, that's
fun. It's a little
fun.
More challenging.
Yeah.
But I only bet like the quarter. I don't put the whole.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a gambler either.
Yeah,
you know?
Not really.
I used to live in Vegas. I lived there twice, actually, in the 70s and in the 90s. And I was never a gambler. And I'm glad I wasn't because I've had many friends losing a lot of money there at the tables. And I always wondered why, you know, what would compel somebody to do that? You know, I mean, you work so hard for your money and then just go and leave it at the table like that, you know? I don't know. It doesn't matter. And I think it makes no difference how much money I would ever have. I probably would never gamble.
Yeah. I think some people live in like a brass ring world, right? Where they're doing the Publisher's Clearinghouse, they're doing the lottery, they're doing the gambling.
Looking for all the shortcuts.
Right. Instead of focusing their life on something and making money, they keep thinking about, well, I don't need to worry about that because someday I'm going to get $8 million all at once.
Yeah.
And they sort of live in that world of
exactly
the quick get.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, they've put $8 million on a table.
Yeah. I know. I don't know how people make that kind of money, but
I would imagine Vegas can be very dangerous if that's your problem.
So. Well, that it is, and that's what I mean. You know, I had a good friend who I remember he was a car salesman, and he would bring in nice paychecks, but he would stop on the way in the casino to cash them and come home with nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I saw.
Yeah, that's hard.
And that created a lot of problems with his wife and all that, which I can understand.
Oh, I can understand too.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have a gambling problem, don't live in Vegas.
That's why I don't work at a Baskin Robbins.
Yeah.
You have to know what your poison is and stay away from it.
Stay away
but
from
since
it.
That's not my poison and I'm not a compulsive gambler, I love Vegas. But I'm envious that you live there during the 70s and the 90s.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, the 70s was amazing to live in Vegas, you know. I mean, that was the period of 8-track tapes.
Right.
Waterbeds in the back of Chevy vans. Everybody had their, like, lowriders and things like that. A lot of weed, bad weed compared to today's.
Right.
But nevertheless, the greatest music ever was written in the 70s,
honey, greatest music, greatest movies.
Right.
Greatest television.
That's true.
It was really an arts decade.
I mean,
decade.
Star Wars and Close Encounters. Yeah. And yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of great movies, too. Like music. I mean, almost all the classics now are from the 70s.
The best music ever.
And
I'll just sit and listen to it all day long.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and people don't understand that, you know, in today's world, that's why it's hard for people like us to really connect with today's music. It's because it's so different, you know. I mean, it's like I was just reading an interview with John Stamos yesterday, and he was talking also about music and how, you know, because they asked him, well, how do you feel to going into your 50s and everything? And he says, yeah, he says, you know, as much as I try to get into today's music, I just, you know, the 70s, 80s, they had melodies to the song, you know. Now it's sort of like, I don't know. I mean, look, there's still bands that make great music and stuff, but, you know, I'm not generalizing. But in general, you look at the top 40, it's all songs that sound the same.
Yeah.
You know,
but maybe
artists
for somebody,
you never heard of.
This is their decade.
Right, exactly.
This is what they love.
And that's what I mean. But as far as we are concerned, it's hard to connect to the music of today.
Like, I have friends, I went to junior high and high school in the 80s. And I have friends that, like, everything is 80s, and they're still stuck in the 80s.
Yeah.
You go to their house, they put the iPod on, it's all 80s. For me, 80s music, I mean, there's some that I love, but for me, 80s music is nostalgia. I remember where I was at that time.
Yeah.
But I don't particularly think the music was all that great.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, like, sit around and put the Safety Dance on and open up my sunroof and drive across. You know what I mean? To me, that's
because it was a punk rock era, and not a lot of people could connect to it, at least in the beginning.
Europop, a lot of like Europop,
right? You
a lot
know,
of the
like
British, second
like
British
Devo
invasion.
And Talking Heads and all that. It was weird music.
I mean, I get what's good about it, but it's not my thing,
right?
At all.
I know. And I remember when punk rock came out, it was really hard to get used to because it was so different. You know, it was sort of like robotic music, you know. And I remember everybody was writing such music. Even Billy Joel had like a sort of like a punkish song. A lot of people did, you know, and it sort of like caught on. You know, some of them were great. I sort of like it, they grew on me. But you're right. You know, many of them were hard to connect.
Glass Houses, right, was kind of his new age album, new wave album.
Right,
I was
right,
getting new age and new wave confused in my brain. Right. That was kind of his new wave. And that's a great album, but we're also talking about Billy Joel.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not talking about, the Safety Dance.
Right. No, that's true. I think his song, the song I'm talking about, was It's Still Rock and Roll to Me.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it sounds punkish if you listen to it and stuff. You know, it's not like really melodic like some of the songs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some of his other songs.
And that's from Glass Houses.
That's
a lot
true.
Of that album does kind of have that feel. It's a fantastic album.
Yeah.
My favorite music of all is that what they call yacht rock.
Yeah,
I sound like such a girl.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's that late 70s music like Ambrosia and
Player. And Toto.
And Kenny Loggins and Boz Scaggs. And they call it yacht rock because it's very popular now with millennials.
Uh-huh.
And they think that it sounds like music that you would listen to on a yacht.
Yeah.
So they have yacht rock parties and they dress up in hats and ascots.
Oh, my God.
And they like go out on boats and have yacht rock parties.
Really?
That's why, so it's actually a term coined by kids about this music that they think is so fascinating. But there was something so groovy about that kind of late 70s soft rock.
Yeah.
We used to call it soft rock, right?
Right, exactly.
There was a soft rock station.
KNX 93.1.
Yeah, and right? I absolutely love, to me, it's wonderful musicianship. And the vocals are great, and you can hear the lyrics. And
right. Yeah, that was late 70s, early 80s.
Uh-huh.
We had KNX FM here. And it left such a mark on me. It was like the best station. It introduced a lot of great adult contemporary songs. You know, like like I remember Men at Work. A lot of other ones that people never heard of, but became really big. You know.
Yeah.
And I remember all that, and I thought, I mean, they would play like Ambrosia and things like
Ambrosia,
that.
Ambrosia,
you know?
Right?
Yeah. And Toto and all that. I mean, these are my favorite bands, you know.
Yeah.
I still listen to them every day.
Like I said, Boz Scaggs.
Yeah.
And Billy Joel kind of went, he's kind of like a music enigma because he kind of went yacht rock during that time.
Yeah.
He went soft rock.
Right.
And Robbie Dupree and Gary Wright.
Right.
I mean, those are all that kind of time period of...
I know. And then you had the hard rock bands like Heart and Kiss.
Yeah.
And the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, Doobie Brothers.
And the Eagles.
Right.
You know,
Foreigner,
and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And
Styx.
All these bands are still
amazing.
Are still big to this day, you know.
And then you had like James Taylor and Carole King and that whole kind of folk movement in the mid
70s. Yeah, exactly.
And funk and disco. And there was just everything.
That's true. Disco was big. 1977,
78. I love disco.
And Saturday Night Fever and that period. Yeah, I mean, kids don't understand. It was so much fun living back in those times, you know.
A lot of the music now, it's like it's almost disco, but it doesn't have that groovy bass line.
Right. So it's sort of like disco mixed with rap, and you get sort of like hip-hop kind of music, you
and
know?
And I don't mind the rapping part if it has that really good beat.
Right, exactly. But often it's sampled from other songs, you know, and it's not original. And I just, you know, I mean, if I hear a rap song over a song that I liked that was not a rap song, I'm kind of like, well, you know, couldn't you be more original than that? You know, couldn't you come up with your own riff?
Right, a lot of the sampling.
Right.
But a lot of movies now are remakes or pieces of other movies put into a movie.
Yeah, that's
we're kind
true.
Of in this mass producing of product time.
Like mishing up everything.
Like back in the 70s, a band would get a 4-album deal.
Right.
And within that 4 albums, they had to have a hit or they wouldn't get re-signed.
Oh, wow.
But it was 4 albums to just kind of play with.
Right.
If you've ever heard Billy Joel's first four, they're some of my favorites.
Really?
Some of the songs are just him and the piano, and they're so gorgeous.
Yeah.
So it was about cultivating an artist. It wasn't about wait until they already have a hit and then sign them.
Right.
You know, the business had not gotten so corporatized.
Yeah. That's true. That's very interesting. Well, let's try our guest again.
Okay.
I'm going to try Ernest Cobb one more time so we can talk about slot machines. I hope we can connect, you know, because apparently he's not calling here.
Your call has been forwarded to an...
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think maybe the time is wrong. Well, they put Eastern Time 1:15, which is 10:15 our time here. So
maybe
I don't.
Maybe he ran to the casino.
Yeah, or something, right?
And wanted to make a couple $1,000 before he talked to us.
Yeah. The interesting thing is his area code. I recognize area codes because I used to be a telephone operator talking about the 70s, right? When I lived in Vegas, when he dialed zero, I would be one of the hundreds that would sit there and answer your call. So I haven't worked with so many area codes and stuff. A lot of them stayed with me. So I know that his area code is Hawaii. And I was going to say, the man obviously knows how to live.
Yeah.
You know, if he makes money off of slot machines and lives in Hawaii.
Yeah.
There you go.
Is there gambling in Hawaii?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, a lot of people do the internet gambling. But that kind of scares me. Because how do you know?
Yeah.
I mean, do you trust somebody with
gambling?
Your money online?
No. But that's what I mean. I think slot machines are the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, it's a computer.
You trust somebody in the Caymans is going to send you a check. But yeah. I trust the casinos here. I mean, I know that they play with us because that's their job is to make money. But I also think that if it says you won $100 and you go cash out, they're going to give you $100.
Yeah.
But how do you know with the internet gambling that it won't just disappear
and
you'll never get your check from the Cayman Islands?
Yeah.
I just don't trust it.
Well, I know. But at the same time, if you go on a maybe, I don't know if reputable would be the right word. The fact that they're offshore and everything, but at the same time, they probably won't last very long if they don't pay out. You know, so they would last more than a few days. So I would imagine they probably do. You know, I mean, how many people can you rip off before people expose you?
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure.
Yeah. So who knows?
Just with money, I'm a little fussier about it floating around the ethers.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather have it.
I know what you mean. The funny thing is we forget these days, but there were days when. There were times when people were afraid to order things on the internet.
Yeah.
When it just started, you know. People were afraid, well, is this site safe? Is my information safe online? And it took several years for people to finally start doing that and feel secure about, you know, buying online.
Yeah.
So, but we're old enough to remember the transformation of the world from offline to online. You know, and in the early 90s when the internet came about, we were in our 30s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
In the early 90s. Yeah. I was in my 20s.
You were in your 20s. Yeah. You're younger than I am. But, but at the same time, you were witness to this. You know, many kids today, they don't know what a world without the internet is, a world that's not connected. But I was thinking about how. You know, when somebody was across the world, it cost you like a little fortune just to call them on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, and today everything is immediate and free.
Yeah. And I remember when I first moved here from Orange County, my phone bill every month just calling my mother was $200 or $300.
Wow.
And now it's what? It's a, you know, you can get a phone line through your cable company for like $10 a month.
Right.
And unlimited everything.
Exactly. And then if you have a cell phone, then you never really pay for calls, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I don't even know one person that still has, well, my parents have a landline at home.
Yeah.
But it's because they don't need cell phones. But other than that, I don't know many people that have landlines at home.
I turned mine into a cell phone because I've had that number my whole, you know, for like 25
years.
Oh,
I see. Okay, cool.
And I use it as my business line. And I thought, well, what if somebody I knew wants to get a hold of me? Or what if, and you also, I don't know, you get something from keeping the line. And, you know, with your cell phone, you pay for your first line. All your other lines are like $15 a month.
That's true.
So I turned the number into a cell phone.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of my backup phone. And it comes in handy sometimes, like when you're getting your new phone and they're hooking it up for you.
Right.
You have to be on another phone.
Right.
So it kind of comes in like super handy.
Yeah, it's backup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Some things in the news. I don't really want to talk about the gun control in Obama anymore because, I don't know, people talk about it too much. No, not really, but I think it's just so many people are talking about it and people are bad-mouthing each other and the president and everything. And I'm like, you know, let's leave it for another day.
But I have one. What do you think about him crying on TV yesterday?
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's like I gave it some thought and I thought, okay, well, maybe it's genuine, but still. I think everything the president does is calculated and pre-planned. And I don't think it was sort of like a sudden thing, you know. You can cry from things when you just first hear about them or if it's something, you know, if you know the people or something. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's extremely sad that the kids have died in shootings and stuff like that. But I don't see that that would be something that would make a president cry, you know. So I think it was pre-planned. And you know, for show, because after all, look what he's doing. He's going around Congress, and that's a problem I have. I don't have a problem with background checks, but when he, and this is not the first time he's doing this, that whatever he thinks Congress is not going to agree with him, he issues an executive order, and then he can do it anyway.
No, I don't believe in that at all.
Right?
No, I don't.
But the drawback with these is that the next president can undo all these things immediately.
Sure.
So
that's why I don't have Obamacare yet. I'm not completely sure. It's not going to get torn apart.
Yeah.
No matter who becomes president, because Hillary Clinton was not in favor of it either. So whoever becomes president... I'm just hanging on right now.
Yeah. I'm just seeing a lot of people suffering because of this Obamacare. I mean, somebody posted on Facebook like a penalty bill for not getting Obamacare, and it was like, what, $2,000 or something? I mean, what is this? If people don't have money for medical insurance, how are they going to have money to pay those penalties?
Well, in my insurance, I am grandfathered into my Blue Cross policy, and my insurance went up $200 a month, almost $250 a month to pay for the people they have to cover with the Obamacare.
Wow.
So why do I have to pay for other people?
Yeah, because...
That's just not right.
No, I mean, they're making it a socialistic system, and that's not a very good thing in America.
I could get the Obamacare, but the problem is that I've had a lot of health problems in my life, and I don't trust it.
Yeah,
because it's like socialized medicine. I have a friend who's been waiting for over a year to see a specialist.
Wow.
And when you're sick, you don't want to wait for over a year to see a specialist.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my worry about what goes on in this country, and now we're talking politics. Yes, guns are terrible, and yes, people should not be allowed. We should be careful about who gets a gun. But what we should really be thinking about is, why are we a country where everyone's shooting each other?
Right.
It's not about the guns themselves. Exactly. Anybody, any country in the world, everybody has guns.
Right.
And even if it's not guns with us, it'll be knives, it'll be something. Right. What's up with us that we want to hurt everybody?
Well, I'll tell you why I think. My theory is because, I mean, the way the United States is different from other countries is we have a lot of individual freedom here. So everybody's out for their own, you know. And the thing is, so you have less connections, I think, with other people, with society. And then I think killing becomes an easier thing to do when you're not in a community. When you look conversely at societies that are very social, like Asians, for example, the Japanese... Sure. They live like in groups, you know, their identity is the group. I think there you would have less of that.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is, somebody posted on Facebook a little meme that shows Honduras as, taking away guns from everybody, and their murder rate is probably one of the highest in the world. Whereas in Switzerland, they allow people to have guns and they have the lowest gun violence in the world. So you're right. It's not about the guns. It's about the people.
No.
And that's what people have to understand. And the bottom line, I mean, you hear it a million times, but it's true that when you outlaw guns, only criminals are going to have guns.
Yeah.
And that's not a good place to
be. It's like drugs. I think legalize drugs.
Yeah.
Legalize them, tax them, put them at Rite Aid.
Right.
You know what? I'll take a box of condoms, some toothpaste, and this cocaine. Fantastic. We can make so much money if we right. just legalized everything. And people right. say, oh, but people become, well, sure, some people become addicted, but people are addicted to gambling and it's not illegal in places, and people are addicted to
alcohol.
Yeah, Starbucks.
Cigarettes, right?
Everything, right? McDonald's. So, but we're also making great tax off those corporations.
Right.
So bring it on. I'm all for capitalism.
Yeah.
Somebody start a Coke company and, yeah, you know.
Exactly. Or at least weed. You
make
know,
Coke I mean, cookies.
Yeah.
Oh, it's ridiculous with marijuana.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
You know, it really is. And the more I read about it, the more I realize how ridiculous these laws have been. And what gets me is someone like Chris Christie, who wants to get elected, and he says, no marijuana under my watch. So he wants to keep it criminalized, which is crazy. You know, the genie's out of the bottle now. The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
Legalization is just a matter of time.
Right. It's like gay marriage. When the states all started doing it,
right.
it was just going to happen.
Yeah.
And now it's with the marijuana is the next thing.
That's
and
true.
And it's going from some states having medical to then states having just legal.
Recreational,
and
right.
you know what? Just do it and yeah. tax it.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just a friggin' plan,
Chris
you know?
Christie. Yeah. Said the man who stole everybody's hurricane yeah. money. Like, where's everybody's hurricane money, Chris?
Yeah.
But it's always a criminal's calling somebody else a criminal.
There you go. You know, the people that are like extremely religious and stuff, they will, you know, sometimes end up being big crooks themselves, you know.
But I think that's part of why this country's jacked up. I talk about this on my show all the time. I think it's we're descendants of Puritans. I mean, you're not, and I'm
right.
not, because our people came later.
Right, but the culture.
But the culture is still descendant of those Puritans, because people say, oh, it's because it's a melting pot and it was the Wild West. Well, after we stopped sending them here, we sent the worst ones to Australia and they were all prisoners. And Australia barely has a pulse. It's such a mellow place. So
right.
you can't blame that.
Yeah.
Because then every country that we sent mass people from Europe to would be the same way.
Yeah.
But I think it's because they sent the religious freaks here,
yeah.
which means a country that was formed by criminals has a healthier mental attitude than a country that was formed by religious zealots. And I really do believe that's what it is, because we're very yeah. like behind the scenes, do what you want, but don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
repression breeds craziness, I think.
Yeah,
and
it does.
Not just guns. It's women drowning their children, and it's kids beating each other up and ganging up, and it's cyberbullying. It's all violence.
Right. Our society is totally preoccupied with violence, and I know I've read quite a bit about it, and it makes you wonder, you know, why? You know, why are we so preoccupied with violence? And if you don't believe me, look at all the movies and the books
yeah.
that are out there, even music, you know.
Yeah.
A lot more with rap music, a lot of violence. And you have to wonder, what's this preoccupation with violence so much? You know,
yeah.
why do we have to read about serial killers all the time? Why are all the bestsellers about killing people? And that's what gets me, you know. I don't get into that. I read a lot of books. Very few of them have to do with mass murderers, serial murderers, things like that. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't appeal to me to live in such a violent existence.
I agree. Well, got all those shows on like Bio Channel and TLC and what used to be Court TV. It's all
right.
like I survived and I shouldn't have made it. And
right.
it's all people getting abducted, abused,
yeah.
telling their stories. And then, you know, I almost got away with it. And twins who kill. And
yeah.
I murdered my spouse. I mean, it's just show after show
yeah.
after show
yeah.
of killers. And it's people love killers, I
right.
guess.
Yeah, and those are the true shows. You know, I'm also
yeah.
talking about fiction.
Oh, God,
people
yeah.
are just preoccupied with murder
yeah.
all the time. And I don't understand that. But yeah, look at some of the, I think some of the most successful movies have been violent,
yeah.
you know, and you have to ask yourself why. I can understand war movies being violent. Okay, it's a war and stuff, but the fascination with murderers, I don't get it. You know, I don't know. But I do think it's because there's a big disconnect in America because you know, I mean, we're an individualistic society, which
sure.
is the best thing about our society. Nobody tells you how to live. You know, you can do whatever you want. But I think the downside is that people are lonely. They're disconnected. They don't feel a connection to other people. So it's easier to kill them
yeah.
and to hurt them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that that zealot religious thing. I think it's, there's something about it. We have the probably the biggest population of evangelicals of any country in the world.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against God or Jesus. I'm a very spiritual and religious person. But I just think there's something about that specific kind of zealotness,
yeah,
that the violence is the other side of it. And those people will say, well, it's because the country was founded by people that didn't have religious freedom, and they had been abused by Europeans, and they had PTSD. But, you know, you're from Israel. Look at Israel. That's a country that was formed by refugees and people who had, and their people had been through atrocities. And it's not a violent country.
Right.
So you can't turn around and say, well, if somebody's been through something, they're going to turn around and start killing people.
That's true.
It's not an excuse. The criminals, yeah, in Australia, they were already killing people. They went to Australia and got mellow.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's something about that puritanical religion, I think.
Yeah, it could be something that has to do with that. You know, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me. But we are a rather religious country.
Oh, God, I mean, we are.
You have a lot, yeah, of people that are very conservative.
We're a Christian country.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that if that was the intention when this country was built, you know. But our forefathers were smart enough to realize it's not always going to be just Christians living here.
Yeah.
And therefore, we got to give the freedom of religion and to be able to be tolerant of other people. And it just amazes me how they were able to foresee the future in so many different ways, you know, our forefathers,
yeah,
writing the Constitution and everything. I mean, think how different those times were.
You, yeah, know,
we're not just talking 250 years. We're talking about 250 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time. I mean, when the world has changed in 20 years since the internet came around, and before that computers, and before that phone and TV. Think how much. So we're not talking about 50, 60 years of change. We're talking 250 years of being able to foresee the problems that would come up in the future.
Yeah.
And thus address them all.
Yeah. And most, you know, of our forefathers were not religious people.
Right.
Many of them were atheists or they were spiritualists.
Right.
And
although some were, you know, but that's the point, I think.
But it was a mixture.
But to go beyond your own religion, to be able to respect other religions, is, yeah, very noble, I think. And it's not just anybody can do it. You know, I mean, look at Islamist extremists that won't tolerate anybody other than them, you know, and creates a lot of problems. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever religion gets too, whenever it becomes fanatical.
Yeah.
Then it's bad.
Yeah.
And
true.
I don't even know if that's a word, but I couldn't think of another word.
Fanatical.
When it becomes,
okay, we can make it a word.
When worship becomes zealotness,
right?
It becomes scary.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I mean, when people do things in the name of God and that, it can get pretty extreme. Definitely.
And more than I fear the takeover of Islam, I fear you know, a holy war in this country.
Yeah.
So we're pretty divided here.
Yeah,
and everything that, you know, when George Bush, George W. Bush, overrode Congress, then he was the devil to liberals.
Yeah.
When Obama does it, it's okay.
Yeah.
When Obama does it, then he's the devil to conservatives. When Bush did it, it was okay.
Right.
What scares me is now we've had two-term presidents in a row,
right,
not listening to Congress.
Right.
And Jefferson's rolling over in his grave.
That's pretty scary.
You know,
stuff.
That's what,
yeah,
I don't like. I, yeah, don't, right, like the going outside the box of the rules because, right, like you said, they set our government up with checks and balances so that this kind of thing couldn't happen.
Exactly, exactly.
And one of those checks and balances was that the executive branch and the Congress were always supposed to not be able to override each other.
Yeah, and to answer to each other, you know, and that's not happening when everybody acts on his own.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Well, Sheena, that's about it for today.
Uh-oh, slot man.
Yeah, the hour just flew by.
That was fun.
No slot man today, but we'll have to get back to him. That's unfortunate because I was looking forward to it.
Me too.
But I'm sure it's a misunderstanding of the time or something like that because, I mean, look, sometimes they'll say, oh, you never called me. Well, we did try to call you too, and it didn't happen. So that's okay. Things happen. It's not the first time, but we've had a lot of fun.
Absolutely. On the show, thank Sheena, you for having me.
And you would have been back the rest of the week, but you're busy.
I know. Taking care of my mama.
Yeah. But so we'll see. We're trying to figure out who else to bring in as a co-host.
Nice.
No one's quite can hold the candle to Sheena, but you. There you go.
And anytime you need me, always I will come and sit in. It's so fun to sit and just do this with you.
Awesome.
You're so talented.
And tell people how they can find you, Sheena.
SheenaMetalExperience.com. That's my daily show here, and a great way to email me through the site there. And also I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Find me there. I'm very accessible. And, of course, I'll get back to you. And thank you for listening to me here on Sam in the Morning with Kelsey.
Sounds good. And I never say this, but you guys can find me also on Facebook and Twitter.
Nice.
And we also have pictures of all the guests on Instagram and on Facebook. So it's a lot of fun, you know. And you guys can contact me, of course, by email through my page and everything. So, which people do, which is great. I get a lot of compliments and co-hosts and things we talk about.
That's
and
awesome.
Stuff. And it's great. So don't forget Sheena Metal. Check her out every day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific time, right here on LA Talk Radio. Sheena, thanks again.
Thank you.
All the best to you. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.